From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I am John Hingsbergen. And for those who are tuning in on Thursday morning at 11 o'clock, there was a conversation during the past hour on Point discussing issues in the Middle East, the politics of the Middle East, the current very volatile situation in Iraq. And we're actually going to touch on some of those issues during today's program. We have an author with us, and he's written a novel, but his novel focuses and actually touches on some of the topics in the news today, as well as post-traumatic stress disorder and care for our nation's veterans. Brad Jones is a former captain and a Marine veteran of the Afghanistan War, born in Mount Sterling, Kentucky, grew up in Salt Lick. He holds a bachelor's degree from Moorhead, an MA in political science from the University of Louisville, and an MBA from Sullivan University. He joined the service in 2000, served in the 1st Battalion, 6th Marines, and in the 6th Marine Regiment, and deployed in Okinawa, South Korea, Japan, Liberia, and in 2004 to Afghanistan. And Brad Jones has written a novel called Black Walls Turn Gray. Brad, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you, John. It's good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. The novel is a story set in Kentucky. Actually, starts out in Kentucky with the story of a Kentucky boy who goes off to the military, to the service, and I guess there's an element of that that is part of your experience, obviously.
So the way the novel is structured is the first third of the novel takes place in Kentucky, and it's takes place before he deploys to Afghanistan. And it starts out when he's in college. He's actually a college football star. Mm-hmm. And then the novel continues through his life as we approach 9/11, and he's inspired by patriotism to join the service, and he goes off to Afghanistan for a 7-month deployment. And that's really where the second third of the novel, if you will, takes place.
So the obvious questions would be about your own experience in that area. Kentucky boy, born and raised in small town Kentucky. Were you a football star?
I was not a football star. No, I'm afraid not. But it worked really well with the story. It's something that actually comes back and is mentioned in a chapter later in the book. But it was an angle that I wanted to put in the story for the lead character.
Have you always wanted to be a writer? And what caused you to decide that this story needed to be written?
So for the first part of your question, I was in grad school at the University of Louisville. I was not working at the time. I was a full-time student. And I would set goals to read 100, 200, 300 books a year. And, I was reading a lot during that time.
I'm doing the math. That sounds like a lot of reading.
Well, I never got to 200 or 300, but I did read 100 books in a couple of consecutive years during that time. And I really enjoyed reading fiction, historical fiction, and biography. And I had an idea for a novel, and I, for whatever reason, I felt like I could write one. And so I sat down at 22, 23, and I started writing. And I finished, over the course of 3 years, I finished a draft of a first novel that I wrote and made a half-hearted attempt to publish it. And you remember, we're going back to the late 90s here. So all of the different assets, the venues that are in place now for people to find publishers wasn't necessarily in place 15 or 16 years ago.
And there were actually bookstores in that era, too.
There were, I believe, I vaguely recall some bookstores. So I was not successful in getting it published. I put it on the shelf, and I said, well, until I figure out how to get this novel published, I've got an idea for a second novel. And so I started writing the second novel, got about half, two-thirds of the way finished with it when I joined the service. And then, of course, when I was in the service, we were so busy. Our tempo was so high, as you mentioned earlier, we were constantly deploying that I simply wasn't able to write, and I didn't write at all when I was in the service and even a couple years after I left the service. When I got out of the service in 2004, summer of 2004, so I'm coming up on 10 years, I still tried to keep in touch with the issues affecting veterans and certainly with Afghanistan, and I didn't read a lot at the time. about PTSD. And going through 2004, 5, 6, there was so much going on, particularly in Iraq. The two battles of Fallujah, Ramadi, Tikrit, Mosul, all of those areas, there was such so many battles going on and such action that when those veterans started to leave the service some years later, the numbers of PTSD claims and the number of veterans who were diagnosed with PTSD really began to climb. And that's when we started seeing more and more news stories about it. So it was my thought that I wanted to do some research on this this topic. I wanted to learn for myself what it was about because I wasn't that familiar with it. And I felt the best way to do that and to tell the story would be to write a novel. It's a mental health issue, so it's a very complex issue. And I felt...
And you're not personally a victim of PTSD.
I'm not a victim of PTSD. I am treated at the Veterans Hospital, the VA hospital in Lexington, but that's more for primary care illnesses. It's not for PTSD.
Your main character in Black Walls Turn Gray, Quince McGowan, mm-hmm. was motivated to join the service as a result of 9/11. Awful lot of people were in that situation. You joined a year earlier. What was the thinking there?
So I, as we talked about, I got the undergrad degree, graduated with the MA in poli-sci from U of L, and I had often thought about joining the service. I had a lot of family members that were in the service, and it was something that I had considered for several years. I didn't want to stop in the middle of my education and go and then come back and pick up that education. So when I graduated in August of 2000, I had made up my mind that I was going to join. I was basically at the age, I was 26, 27 at the time, I either had to do it or forget about it. And so I joined and went to Officer Candidate School in October of that year.
Where were you on 9/11 and how did that change your life?
Well, that's a great question. So we spent, we being the men and women who I served with at the time, we spent a year in Quantico. So the way this plays out is I got there in October of 2000. OCS is a little less than 3 months. And then every Marine lieutenant goes through something called the Basic School, TBS. And it's also in Quantico, and it's a fantastic school. It lasts 6 months, and they introduce Marine lieutenants to every single area of the Marine Corps. And what I mean by that is you will spend 2 or 3 weeks learning about intelligence, 2 or 3 weeks learning about logistics, communication, administration. You'll have classroom instruction, and you'll actually go out and you'll put that into use. You'll do training out in the field in those particular areas. So it's very effective. You learn as much as you can in that short period of time. During that time, you're also assigned your MOS, your military occupational specialty. And I requested to be in the infantry, and I was given that opportunity. And so my infantry training was also in Quantico. So in total, I spent a little more than a year in Quantico. During September 11th, we were scheduled to do a training exercise, and we were gathered there near where we our barracks, and we were going to do a mortar hike. And so it's one that we dreaded for a long time. It was a very difficult hike, one we heard a lot of horror stories about. And we were out in this LZ training, preparing to do this hike.
LZ.
Landing zone.
Okay.
And we were preparing to do this hike. And then, of course, one of our instructors came out and told us what had happened. And keep in mind that the FBI Academy is in Quantico.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually not far from where the basic school is at. And so we were part of our mission that night, the night of 9/11, was to provide security to the FBI Academy. So we were doing vehicle patrols, armed vehicle patrols around Quantico and in particular in the area of the FBI Academy.
did 9/11 mean that you ended up, is that, of course, I guess you did service in Afghanistan for a while. Did 9/11 change the path of what was to happen for you in your service in the Marines?
It certainly did. 9/11 and, of course, the Iraq War. The Iraq War did not affect me. I was not sent there. But so many of the lieutenants like myself who had served in the years leading up to 9/11, there were scheduled deployments. And so you would do a deployment. You would do what's called a med float. So you would do a deployment on a ship for 7 or 8 months into the Mediterranean and other areas, or you would typically do a 6-month deployment to Okinawa. Those were the main deployments that Marines from the 2nd Marine Division, where I was from, those were the deployments that they would do. So when 9/11 came about, it changed things for me because late in my service, in very early 2004, we were deployed to Afghanistan.
When 9/11 occurred, and I don't want to focus too much on this, and we'll come back in a couple of minutes and talk about PTSD. Did you have mixed feelings about, wow, what have I gotten myself into? Because joining the military in 2000 was a lot different than late 2001 or early 2002.
I think not necessarily mixed feelings about it, but certainly it was a shock. It was a shock, obviously, to everybody. But when you go from the mind frame that you're in about, okay, I have 2 months left of training, and then I will be assigned to a Marine battalion, and then some point down the road I'll do this med float or I'll do this deployment to Okinawa. For us, we knew we'd already had a deployment scheduled to Okinawa. And then 9/11 changes everything. And so, yeah, you know, it was really a shock.
It means you could be doing what the service is originally intended to do, fighting in wars.
That's exactly
in combat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're going to come back to Brad Jones. Brad is the author of a new novel, Black Walls Turn Gray. We'll talk a little bit about the novel. We're going to talk about some of the issues that Brad addresses in the story that he has written. He's a Kentuckian. He's from Lexington now, and he's here with us to discuss his novel, to discuss his service in the Marine Corps, and issues of PTSD, care for our veterans, and we're interested in hearing from you. Questions, comments, stories for Brad Jones. Feel free to go ahead and get on the line now, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen, and this week we have one guest, but a guest with a real story to tell, and he's told a story in a new novel called Black Walls Turn Gray. Brad Jones served in the United States Marines, and he works in the Lexington area, lives in the Lexington area, and you've written how many novels now?
So this is the third novel I've written, okay. But this is, of course, will be the first one that I've published.
So he's launching this novel, Black Walls Turn Gray, and it's really not available in stores right now. Can't buy it on Amazon.com?
The ebook on Amazon will be out by July 1st, and then with the other ebook retailers, it should be shortly thereafter. The print version will come out in mid to late July.
June is PTSD Awareness Month, Awareness of Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. We talked briefly about your interest in PTSD. Did you know people like Quince McGowan when you were in the service, people who, one, motivated to sign up to enlist because of 9/11, two, people who went through traumatic experiences who are going to live with those traumatic experiences for the rest of their lives?
I certainly had a lot of Marines, particularly later in my 4 years, that joined because of out of patriotism for 9/11. As you said earlier, I joined a year before. It was a 4-year tour. So, but by the time that we were deployed to Afghanistan in 2004, we were seeing a lot of enlisted Marines who joined because of 9/11. And I have several friends who saw some combat. One in particular, a very good friend of mine, was a part of an IED. They were attacked on the same forward operating base that is mentioned in the book. and they went out to basically in the direction of where that attack came, and the enemy had placed a landmine in the one little road that went up that valley, and his vehicle struck that mine, and it wounded two Marines in that vehicle. He was not wounded, but it wounded two Marines in that vehicle.
But PTSD is not necessarily related to physical injury, correct?
It's not related to physical injury, and it's not contained just to veterans. I mean, so often we associate PTSD with veterans, but at any point in time, about 4% of the American public has PTSD. It's brought about by any traumatic or life-threatening event. And so when we're talking about traumatic events, it could be a car accident, it could be the loss of a loved one, natural disasters, abuse, any of those things can result in PTSD.
Did you actually see combat, participate in combat in Afghanistan?
What we would call like a firefight. We would see more of shells that the enemy would fire at us, and that happened both in Bagram Airfield and in Assadabad, which is the forward operating base that I was on. So, but nothing like what so many veterans saw in places like Fallujah and Ramadi.
We do want to talk to our listeners, and we're going to do so in a few minutes, but we encourage you to get on the line now, 800-621-8890. I know that Mike from Berea is on the line, and Mike, we will appreciate if you can hang on for just a little bit. We want to chat a little bit more with Brad Jones and lay out some of the background on this topic and his novel, Black Walls Turn Gray, on this week's Eastern Standard. Brad, talking about PTSD and veterans care. You've received certain veterans. Medical care has been a big issue the last few weeks, very controversial issues about the waiting lists and people in terms of actually receiving service from the Veterans Administration medical system. What's been your experience as a veteran?
So there are two VA hospitals, There's two VA hospitals in Lexington. One is in Cooper Drive. It's basically connected to the University of Kentucky Hospital. And there's an affiliation between those two hospitals. And that hospital provides what I call specialized care. If you go in for a colonoscopy, which is something that's been in the news so often with these veterans and the scandals, that would take place at the Cooper Drive facility. The other facility is on Leestown Road on the other side of town. And that provides primary care, outpatient care. So if you have a cold or something, you would go to your primary care physician at the Leestown facility. Anytime that I've gone for that type of illness, it's worked well for me. It's been very convenient. There are typically no waits. It's close to my work. I can go in, see the physician, get the medications prescribed, and get back out and get to work pretty quickly. The issue with the scandals, of course, has been for more of the specialized care.
And would that include PTSD?
That would include PTSD, of course. So let's take this for an example. The Cooper Drive facility and the GI clinic, they are, again, there's an affiliation with the University of Kentucky, and they are only open for about 3.5 hours each week. So from 1 basically to 4:30 every Thursday afternoon, that's when that clinic is open. That's when they see patients for GI-related illnesses. And that's obviously not enough.
Some of us have waited that long in a doctor's office.
Well, usually if I have an appointment there at 1 o'clock, it is often 3 or 3:30 before I get in to see the physician. And the physician that I see when I'm there is a UK doctor. It's not a VA doctor. And I'm not being critical of the folks who are work there.
Sure.
He is a great physician, and the nurses that work there do a wonderful job. But there's simply not enough time to see all of the veterans. There are 92,000 veterans in this area. I don't know exactly what counties it's referring to, but basically 92,000 veterans could potentially be supported by those two hospitals. And so three and a half hours a week is simply not enough.
What's the cause? And you're, as you understand it, obviously you're not in that system, but is it a political system, a political issue where they're not receiving the adequate funding? I understand their computer systems, what, date to the 1980s, which I don't know if I even had my hands on a computer until late in the 1980s myself.
That's a great question. I'm not sure I can answer it. I can tell you that the budget for the Department for the Veterans Affairs has continued to grow 3 or 4% each year. The current budget, the fiscal year 15 budget, is $164 billion. It's up about $25 billion since fiscal year 2013. Some areas have seen larger increases than others, but I'm not sure why there would be that kind of deficiency, you know, with the budget continuing to increase. There is some legislation that's going through Congress now. I know that similar bills have passed the House and Senate, but I'm not sure if President Obama has signed that legislation. But it does in part include increased funding specifically for those hospitals to hire additional physicians and nurses.
This is Eastern Standard on the EKU stations. 800-621-8890 is our number. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet. Follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST, and then you can send us a direct message. And I'm looking at the computer and the phone and all that sort of stuff. If we get a tweet, we will do our best to acknowledge it and pass your question along. Let's go ahead and talk to Mike from Berea, who's been patiently waiting for us. Mike, thank you so much. You are on the air with Brad Jones.
Hello. Thank you, Captain Jones. A pleasure to have heard someone has written a book such as yours, and I like the title a lot. It says a lot in a few words.
Thank you.
I would say as to the problem with the Veterans Administration, which I think it's going to be books like this and scandals that are currently happening. You know, if you pick up a haystack and shake it and a couple needles come out, your haystack's probably full of needles. And the VA is systemically failing. It's not the people that work there. And I've met dear people who helped me at the Veterans Administration, and I'm sure you have as well and other veterans that are listening. But there's also a lot of embedded political culture that is keeping people in jobs where they need to move out, and the system needs to streamline itself. But that's only going to happen with money and with funding. And I just want to say that these books and the things that are coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan now that veterans are getting a bit older and the self-publishing and there's more multimedia outlets, I hope this raises an awareness that the Vietnam generation didn't get.
And Mike, let me ask you this. You have been diagnosed with PTSD. What does that mean, or has that meant in your life? What, first of all, what brought that about? What service did you experience that caused that for you? And again, what has it brought about for you?
I was in the Marine Infantry during the invasion of Iraq. And if someone wants to know, I think everybody has a little bit of PTSD. And if people want to see what that's like, I don't know, maybe a place when you were a kid and you wrecked your bicycle very, very hard. And every time you drive by that spot, even though you're 25, you get a bad feeling in your gut. That is a very light form of that. And as the captain said, you know, a car wreck, being beaten up by a spouse, anything can have this. And probably a large percentage of the population walks around with a small form of it. But these extreme forms that we're seeing come from the cognitive dissonance and the psychological cost of killing and watching people kill in combat. And this is one of the costs of doing business if you want to go to war. And the Veterans Administration and Congress are going to have to come to a consensus on how to address this problem and not piecemeal it until we have a big problem. And we have more addicts right now from Iraq and Afghanistan on opiates than we did in after Vietnam.
What kind of treatment have you had? What has helped you?
Exercise, sir. A lot of exercise and a lot of being able to learn to communicate. I worked in wilderness therapy with kids years after my service, and in learning to teach these things and teach these kids who had emotional problems and, you know, often came to us in handcuffs and not able to see how they felt, to connect with their emotions and to learn it. And in teaching that, I was able to learn it. And I come back now and see myself surrounded by veterans who are drowning in alcoholism and opiate addiction. And we have to do something collectively as a group, and we have to connect with the Vietnam veterans before they get further out or are dead.
Well, Mike, thanks for telling your personal story. I want you to get an opportunity to interact here with Brad.
Well, Mike, thanks for your comments, and certainly thank you for your service. I'm curious about the if you've had any treatment at the VA, any of the cognitive therapies or those sort of things. Have you experienced any of that?
So I myself practice cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm also a practicing Buddhist, and that has given a lot of spiritual direction to my life after the war. But I find those treatments very inadequate and very mechanized. They want to stamp you at the VA, and they want to give you a drug and anesthetize you. And I've worked in treatment for 3 years, and I see the need for those drugs occasionally. But what I see is that the VA sends you through, gives you, you know, what do you want here, mood stabilizer and anti-anxiety, and here's a light Prozac, and then they smack you on the butt and send you out the door and say, come back and tell somebody how you feel. There's no change of lifestyle. There's no community support outside of the VA groups that you can attend. Mm-hmm. There's no exercise program that changes the brain chemistry in a way that mood stabilizers and anti-anxieties do. And we have to look at this holistically. And, you know, the only way I stay sane, and in a metaphorical way, is that I exercise every single day and I build a community with people who I can speak to. But veterans don't want to do that. The infantry, you know, there's a taboo in the infantry against having a blister. Mm-hmm. You know, are these guys really going to go seek help when they have a mental boo-boo? It's going to take them a while.
Sure. You're certainly right about the what a momentous issue this is going to be. There's about 2.5, 2.7 million Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. So far, the VA has diagnosed about 300,000 with PTSD, and that's just what the VA has seen. I mean, others who have not gone to the VA are certainly suffering with PTSD. The estimates are as high as 50%. So we're talking well above, a million veterans just from Iraq and Afghanistan who could be suffering from PTSD.
Mike, thank you again for your call.
Thanks
for sharing your story.
All the
best to you. Thanks for listening. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, 800-621-8890. Obviously not your average discussion of a novel, a work of fiction. This book, Black Walls Turn Gray, is a work of fiction based on some very serious reality. And Brad Jones, the author, is here with us. Tell me about that title. What does that title refer to?
So there are about 23 million veterans in America today. And about 9 million have registered for treatment at the VA. And unfortunately, we're seeing about 400 or more veterans of World War II pass on each day. And so of course, the Korean veterans are also well into their 80s, and their numbers are dwindling. So we're seeing the Vietnam War generation kind of become the elder generation of veterans. In fact, Mike just alluded to that as well. So that's where the title came from. It's, you know, we've always thought as the Vietnam War generation, as this younger generation for decades. And now, you know, as we find ourselves at the end of the Afghanistan War, the Iraq War, at least for now, is done. And we're seeing now the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans are the younger generation. And the Vietnam War veterans are the older generation.
Not sure I understand the metaphor, the Black Wall. Are we talking about the Vietnam Memorial in Washington?
Exactly. Yeah. And the lead character's father, and he plays very prominently throughout the book, he was a veteran of the Vietnam War. And so there's a lot of discussion about his service in the book as well.
PTSD, I don't recall having heard about it until following Vietnam. Was that an issue in past military service?
It's always been an issue. It's just been called different things. World War I, they've called it shell shock, and it was called battle fatigue. In World War II, combat stress is another identifier, but it's essentially the same thing. It's you know, just this seeing these traumatic events over and over again and the effects that they have on our veterans.
We're talking about the Brad Jones novel, Black Walls Turn Gray, about his military service, his observations about world events today. And we're interested in hearing from you, perhaps your story about military service, your questions for Brad, or your comments about this whole issue of veterans care, as well as PTSD. This June is PTSD Awareness Month, and it's one of the reasons for our program. And as I understand it, Brad, it's one of the reasons you're rolling out the book, or at least talking about the book, a little earlier than the actual physical release of the book next month.
It is. We had hoped to publish the book in June. It's something that we worked very hard to do leading up to this month, but it's simply didn't happen, and you know, we continue to work on the book. It'll go to the printer next week, and then of course it'll come out next month.
We hope to interact with you during the next hour, or next 20 minutes. That's all we have, is a third of the hour remaining. 800-621-8890 is our number. Send us an email if you choose to put your words in writing, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. If you can do it in 140 characters or less, it's at wekueest. Post on our Facebook page, and feel free to have a discussion of, you know, offer some comments back and forth on the Facebook page, even following the live broadcast of this program. We will continue with Brad Jones and our topic as we take a short break, and invite you to call 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen with Brad Jones, author of Black Walls Turn Gray, a work of fiction based in the reality of PTSD, military service, veterans military care, veterans health care. And we invite you to be part of the program at 800-621-8890. Let's go ahead and talk right away to Susan from Mount Vernon. Susan, thank you so much for calling. You are on the air.
Hi.
Go right ahead with your story or your question, Susan.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So I was actually a civilian whenever I went overseas. I was a contractor, and I had really good medical insurance. Of course, I lost that medical insurance whenever the contract ended. But when I came home, I was seen at the VA clinic in Berea. And their post-traumatic stress program is about 8 weeks long, and it's a lot of paperwork. And you have to be available every week to travel up there. And so I'm traveling like 45 minutes, you know, just to see one of their social workers, and that's what they call it. And the only thing they ever did for me was the same thing as the other gentleman said, was they gave me like 6 different medications to take, and then I had to see this person every week. And if you're working, it's just not, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't help you.
Susan, let me ask you, and we'll also ask Brad, what do you think about the idea of potentially making private health care services available to veterans to augment those provided by the Veterans Administration?
I think that would be more beneficial, especially, I mean, if they have to pay travel pay for a soldier to go up there. I mean, it would actually even out the money. I believe that it would help us so much more if it was readily available for us to get there. Of course, we're going to go if it's a 10-minute drive.
There, as I mentioned this earlier, Susan, there's some legislation that was passed by both the House and the Senate, and again, as I said, I don't know exactly where that's at if the President has signed it, but it's referred to as the Veterans Access to Care Through Choice, Accountability, and Transparency Act, and there's a number of provisions in that legislation, and among those provisions is a choice card, and it talks about issuing a choice card to every veteran, and if the veteran lives more than 40 miles away from a VA facility, from a hospital, or from one of the community-based offices, and if there are certain wait times, and I think there's a different metric depending upon what illness you're asking to be treated for, but if there's a certain wait time that you cannot get in to see a physician at that VA facility, then you are entitled to go to a private physician. So that's That's one of the aspects of this legislation that's somewhere in Congress now.
Susan, thank you for your call with your story and your comments. This is Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890. Back to the phone in a moment. We'll talk to Larry, who is waiting. But Brad Jones, talking about the care provided by the Veterans Administration medical facilities, you did some research in advance by surveying services that were available elsewhere?
So, you know, as I said earlier, I started out just reading about PTSD. I knew the very basics about it, but I by no means was an expert. So I just started out doing research where I could find it, read about it, understand the symptoms, understand the effects, secondary effects of PTSD, not only on the patient, but on the families. And that's something that's, I think, mentioned very prominently in the book. The families certainly suffer in so many cases when someone has severe PTSD. To go further from that, I certainly wanted to talk to veterans with PTSD and to talk to clinical psychologists. And I did sit down on many occasions with private clinical psychologists, and we talked about the types of therapies that they offer. And I really just sat down with them and said, look, if I came in to your office and I said, I'm a veteran and I had this traumatic experience in Iraq or Afghanistan and I'm having these flashbacks, these nightmares, how would you treat that? What would be your process? And so we kind of gamed out, if you will, several different scenarios. I truly wanted to understand how they would react and the process that they would slowly evaluate, how they would evaluate the patient and then prescribe treatments. So I did that with private clinical psychologists. On several occasions, I actually reached out to the VA facilities in Lexington, and I tried to contact several of the chaplains who, you know, offer some of the counseling services, and I was never called back. And I did finally reach a clinical psychologist, and she was very kind. She was very nice, and she wanted to help. But she said that she had to talk to the public affairs office and get their approval before she could speak to me. And so about a week later, she called back and said that that they had instructed her not to talk to me. So I don't know if they assumed that the book would be or could be critical of the VA, but I was never able to connect to the VA at that level.
Is the book critical of the VA?
The book is not critical of the VA's treatment. The book... There are points in the book where it talks about the VA kind of being a bureaucracy. And keep in mind that the VA employs about 300,000 full-time employees. So, and as I said earlier, it has a budget of $165 billion. It is a bureaucracy. There is a lot of red tape. So it's certainly not specifically critical of the VA. I wanted to put the focus more on the veteran, what he's thinking, how he views the world around him, how he basically deals with his suffering, and how he thinks the world views him. That's where I wanted to put the focus of the book on and not back on the VA.
This is Eastern Standard. Brad Jones is the author of Black Walls Turn Gray, a novel that addresses issues based in Kentucky. Starts out in Kentucky with a Kentucky boy and his life in military service and life following military service. I started reading, got an advance copy because it's not available yet, but haven't gotten that deeply into the story, but he does come back from the service, and we're going to hear about his experiences with PTSD if we read your novel.
So he comes back to Kentucky after his deployment to Afghanistan, and there were things that he saw during that deployment that continued to trouble him. And even though he's back in Kentucky, there are several chapters that flash back to Afghanistan. And it's really there almost up until the end of the book. But it just goes through his life. He has a family and how PTSD affects the life that he knew before he went into the service.
Why did you not personally experience PTSD?
It's a good question.
Did you see things, experience things that could have caused it?
Sure. I mean, there were things that could have caused it. I think it's just difficult to answer that question. I don't know if I certainly didn't experience some of the things that, as I said earlier, some of these guys saw in the battles of Fallujah. You got to remember, I was there very late in my 4 years. We actually weren't even scheduled to go to Afghanistan. And it was a deployment that came up very quickly. And I was a platoon commander for Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 6th Marines for most of the time that I was in the service. At the very end, I was in a type of a headquarters unit for regiment. And that's how I deployed to Afghanistan. There were a lot of scenes where we did patrols in the village of Assadabad in the Kunar province. And so, and as I mentioned earlier, there were some examples where we had some combat scenes of shells and those sort of things, but certainly not the day-to-day grind in combat that some guys saw when they went over there. And I'm sure that's the distinction.
Let's go back to the phone and talk to Larry. Our phone number, by the way, 800-621-8890. If you'd like to get on the line with author and former Marine Captain Brad Jones, 800-621-8890. Larry, go right ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Jones, first I'd like to say thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
I have a nephew who returned from multiple tours of duty in Afghanistan, and I feel like there are things that we can do as citizens that can help all our veterans, especially family members we know. Would you like me to mention them?
Sure, please do.
One I think is, that I did was that I gave him keys to my shop that's out here in the countryside, written permission to be there on my property, and I encouraged him to call me at any time of the day or night. And I also have a small store. I offer a 10% discount to all veterans, and I found that anything that I do to appreciate our military is always appreciated by them. Just to let you know, like when he comes out, he's a joy to be around, and he seems to have great self-esteem, and he's carrying a 4.0 in nursing right now. He's actually now being used as a nursing assistant, so he's getting that training. So I thought I would just offer that to this discussion.
And Larry, what's the role of your shop, giving him keys to that shop? What kind of shop? Is this a place where he can go and work out frustrations? Is that the idea?
Yeah, and just to have freedom to work. It's out in the countryside. He's got lots of room to walk. He can hunt if he wants to. He can work on his car if he wants to. There are tools in there. Gives him hands-on release where he can get away and work out his frustrations away from the public in private and breathe some fresh air.
Well, Larry, you bring up just a great point, and that's the point that I attempted to address in the book, and that's the importance of family and the encouragement that they can give to veterans with PTSD. You know, you are the closest to that veteran, and the veteran's likely to trust you more than anyone else. And so if you're giving him that encouragement, then I think that's the right step, and that certainly should help him going forward.
All right, Larry, thank you so much for your call to Eastern Standard. Our number, 800-621-8890. Brad Jones, from his military service and his interest in writing, decided to write this novel, Black Walls Turn Gray. Now, Brad, sometimes a story, we'll go to a movie, or we'll read a book, I'm not going to ask you to tell us the ending, but sometimes it's a downer when it's all over. Does this story essentially end on a hopeful note? Can you say that much?
It does end on a hopeful note. Of course, there's a lot of suffering that he goes through that leads up to that ending. But the very ending does end on a hopeful note.
You have spent a lot of time researching and learning about PTSD and veterans' medical care and so forth. What, aside from PTSD, will those of us reading the novel learn?
Well, the novel really kind of addresses this shift away from primary care. And maybe not, that's not the correct way to say it. Maybe it's not necessarily a shift away from primary care, but there's certainly a focus on new medicines. Iraq and Afghanistan war has produced as we've talked about throughout the last hour, a lot of veterans that have these mental illnesses. There's also a lot of veterans who are amputees because of IEDs. Certainly that's occurred with all wars, but I think that we're likely to see an increase in mental health and in amputees and those sort of things from the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And we're seeing that in the budget increases recently. There's been about a 61% budget increase in mental health issues, the mental health budget for the VA in the last 5 years. So it's got the attention, or it's getting the attention at least at this point, of some of our lawmakers, and they're starting to prescribe a lot more money.
Speaking of attention, let's spend a few minutes talking about, I guess he's a sergeant, Bo Bergdahl, and who was just recently released, actually, in a trade, having been held by the Taliban. What are your observations on that whole situation?
So when he disappeared, I believe he was a PFC, and he was promoted throughout his disappearance to a sergeant. Hmm. So I think we're coming up on 3 weeks since he was released. And so much has been written about Bo Bergdahl in the last 3 weeks, and I've tried to keep up with it. I've read a great deal about it. And there's those who say that we should do whatever we need to do to bring our guys back. And certainly the spirit of that, I think we all can agree to. I do have an issue with us trading five high-level Taliban prisoners for a soldier. And I don't mean that to sound callous at all. Of course, we want our men and women home. But this idea of trading terrorists, more or less, for prisoners is not a good thing. That could very easily inspire another terrorist group sometime down the road to grab an American and then expect that we're going to negotiate with them again. So I don't think it sets a good precedence. As far as Bo Bergdahl, as I mentioned, I have read so much about what happened back in June of 2009, what he was thinking. And I keep going back to the statements that are made by members of his unit. In fact, several of them testified yesterday to a committee in Congress. And they say, look, and these were the people that were there with him, not just out on patrol, but the people who sat around with him at night, and they talked about the mission and how they felt about it and what was going on at home. And several of these guys have come forward and said, no, he was disgruntled with the mission, and he had mentioned desertion. And it really leads me to believe, and again, this is just my feeling with what I've read so far, that he, in fact, deserted.
Very complicated story, and we may not know the truth for a long time, if ever, I guess.
The Army just started the investigation. They assigned, I believe, a major general to head that investigation this week. There was some kind of acclamation that they wanted Bo Bergdahl to go through for a few weeks before they started that investigation.
We have just a couple of minutes, but let's go ahead and talk with Melanie from Lexington. Melanie, we just have maybe a minute or so for your story. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to thank you so much for bringing attention to the needs of our veterans. I'm a nurse with the Navy Reserve, and so in my experience, I have seen lots of people come back with PTSD, particularly because in the past 3 years, the reserves have been such a huge part of deployment. And one instance in particular that you reminded me of was I had a sailor come to me, and he was exhibiting a lot of the signs of PTSD. I didn't think he was in a danger to himself, so we sent him over to the VA hospital, and I had called ahead and was, you know, trying to get him some assistance. Well, he went into their ER, and then he came back to me 3 hours later, and I said, well, what did they do? And they basically handed him a bag of pills and was like, oh, well, we'll follow up with you at some point.
We're hearing a pattern here.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's nice that you throw money at the problem, but part of the problem is the huge bureaucracy. And the point that once you're a GS employee, it almost takes an act of Congress to get you fired. or anything to happen to you.
Part of the systemic issue there. Melanie, we're going to have to move on, wrap up with Brett. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Sorry we didn't have more time for you. Brad Jones, again, this book, Black Walls Turn Gray, focuses on military service, focuses on the effects of that service, PTSD, medical care, and so forth. You have anything else you're going to be writing? Anything else in mind that may fall in this area with your next effort?
You know, I don't have any plans at this point to write anything else about Afghanistan. This was a process that I wanted to work through, and I've dedicated myself to this book more or less for the last 5 years, and I've done all the research that I could, and now the product is here. But I don't really have any plans to write any more about Afghanistan.
Let us know the results, how the book does here as when it goes on sale here. Brad Jones from Lexington, former Marine captain and author of Black Walls Turn Gray. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Eastern Standard is a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. Jonice Franklin is our technical director. Julie Tennell has been on the phones, our producer for this program. Once again, doing a great job, Richard Turner. We invite you to visit weku.fm for more information about the show, to download or listen to the audio. Again, that's weku.fm. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in.